Good morning. So over the summer, for those of you who have been here and those of you who haven't, you can always listen on the website, we've been looking at flawed heroes. So who are these flawed heroes? People from the Bible who God has used. People who have made mistakes. Not dissimilar to me anyway, and maybe some of you. Hopefully God's going to use us even when we don't always make the best choices. So we were sent a list of potential subjects, which is very helpful. And I looked down the list and I thought, I don't think I've ever heard a sermon on Rebecca. Maybe I should do that. So that's what I chose. And then I started looking at the source material and I thought, now I know why nobody's ever preached on Rebecca. But, you know, it's a good place. She's she's named in Romans, as you know, she's throughout the Bible, and she's part of the covenant promises of God. So let's hopefully we can learn from how she lived her life and how we can do that. If you want to follow her story in the Bibles, the hospitality team will bring one around if you stick your hand in the air or find it on your phone. We're looking at Genesis chapters 24 to 27. We're not going to have a reading, I'm afraid. I'm just going to have me retelling the story and talking about it. So I don't know if we know who Rebecca was, if we've heard her name. Maybe you're named after her. But she was, when we first meet her, a very helpful and adventurous young woman who spoke with God. And then later on, she's better known as a deceptive and manipulative woman. So who was she? Maybe she was both. Let's see if we can find out a little bit about it. So what do we already know about Rebecca? As with many of the women of the Old Testament, she's probably defined best by the men in her life. So can anybody tell me? Does anybody know who was Rebecca married to? Isaac, well done, thank you. So he was the promised son of Abraham and Sarah. They'd waited a long time for Isaac to come along. And then Isaac had enjoyed life as his mother's pride and joy, but she had died when he was 40 years old and he was mourning for her, and his father thought it was a good time for him to find a wife. So he sent his trusted servant, Eliezer, off to find a wife for Isaac. Now, where do you think Rebecca might have grown up? Does anybody know who she was more than who she was married to? Well, she lived in Haran, which is where Abraham had left when he'd been called by God to travel and go to the promised land of Canaan. And she was actually the granddaughter of Abraham's brother. So she was kind of a vague cousin, twice removed or something from Isaac. So that gives you, she was part of the family, but not immediately part of the family. And she was very separate. But Abraham was very clear to Eliezer, he didn't want to have anybody from the local Canaanite population being Isaac's wife. It was important that there would be somebody alongside him who wouldn't distract him from God. So Eliezer went off and asked God for a sign that the woman that he found would not only draw water for him from the well, but would also offer to water his camels. He went with 10 camels all laden down with dowry for this wife that he was going to find. And he comes along to the well and finds this beautiful young woman, and very helpfully, she draws water for him and for his camel. She offers straight away to be helpful. And even then, she offers hospitality for the night with her family. So she takes him, when they find out that they're related, this is even more exciting to Eliezer. He knows that God's part of this journey, as God has led him to this place, led him to this woman, led him to this family. And then Laban, who's Rebecca's brother, is very excited when he sees the camel loads of jewelry and the nose ring and the bracelet that Eliezer has already given Rebecca. They hear about how God has blessed Abraham. He left generations before and went off. They don't know what's really happened to him. And now they hear that he's been blessed with wealth and good fortune, and he's very happy that his little younger sister is going to bring him this dowry and go off and have a good life. So Rebecca's mum is a bit worried about this, so let's wait a bit let's wait a bit. But Rebecca's up for it. The next morning, she's like, no, I want to go. I don't want to stay here. I'm off for the next phase of my journey. I want this adventure. So she didn't wait for any time to say goodbye. She just off with Eliezer back to Abraham, back to find this future husband. Now, Isaac heard the story from Eliezer and was very excited with this beautiful woman, and so he took her to be his wife. I hope you like all the beautiful pictures that I've managed to find. So he took Rebecca to his mother's tent as his wife. He was comforted by her, and she was loved by him. So everything was going really well. Lovely, wealthy, loving husband, part of this covenant through Abraham, from the promise of God. And yet there was a problem. 20 years go by and still no child, still no promise coming to fulfillment. Now, as we know, children are a blessing, sometimes more than others, some more of them than. But at this time in particular, children were the whole purpose of life. That was why you carried on. That was a blessing from God to have lots of children. So this would be interpreted that they displeased God some way. Other people, their friends, their family, their servants would have been given in marriage, would have had children, would have had their own families. Maybe even their friends' kids would also have been having kids. And yet there they were, still alone. The promise of God seemed unfulfilled. 20 years of waiting every month. Maybe this month. Oh, no. The distress and the pain of that not coming to be. Feeling that time was running out, maybe. Not knowing what was going on. Trying to trust God, but feeling looked down upon by everybody else. Maybe the fact that Isaac also had taken a while to appear kept them going. They knew the promise that even beyond the biological way, for Sarah and Abraham, they'd still manage to conceive and bear Isaac. Maybe the fact that his father had given taken other women caused him not, and the distress that had caused to his mother meant that he didn't go that way. But still there was a problem here. What's going on? So often we find ourselves waiting for something to happen, like the cafe opening. We wait for an answer to our prayers, and all we see is the mess and the distress, and we can't see what's going on. We need to live in the patience and trust in God, even when all we see are the knots and the threads of the back of the tapestry. But actually, God's got a different perspective. He's looking at the front. He's looking at the beautiful picture that's going to be made. He's looking from a distance rather than us in the middle of the mess and confusion. God sees it from the light of his victory, as we sang earlier. But back to Rebecca. Isaac turned to God and prayed for his wife, and a miracle happened. They were blessed. After those 20 years, Rebecca was finally pregnant. Yay! We don't know how long Isaac had been on his knees praying, whether he suddenly thought after 20 years, oh, maybe I should ask God. I'm sure that probably wasn't the case. He'd probably been praying for a long time. Maybe they just needed to learn patience. Maybe they needed to trust that it was God and not just biology. God had a plan and a purpose in it. He knew when it would be fulfilled, when the promises would be fulfilled. But the pregnancy was not easy. And Rebecca was thinking, what on earth have I signed up for? Everybody else was blooming when they were pregnant. What's going on here? It just felt like there was a battle inside her. No reassuring scans, no blood tests to say everything's okay, it's all right. So in her desperation, she sought the Lord's advice. And he spoke. She's one of only three women in the Old Testament who had an actual conversation with God, two-way conversation. Did anybody know who else? Not in the Old Testament. No, see, God spoke to Hannah, but they didn't have a conversation. So I was reliably informed that it was Eve, once she'd been eating apples, and Hagar, when she ran away from Sarai into the desert. So only three. And in fact, Rebecca's, in Genesis, she's got the most words of any woman. So you know, we kind of need to think, why is she there? What, you know, her story is important to us. But God said to her that there's two nations in your womb, and two people from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger. Hopefully that encouraged her in the midst of her pain and distress and discomfort. And then she gave birth to twin boys. Maybe that was a surprise. Obviously, she wouldn't necessarily have known that. Maybe after the words, there you go, beautiful, that it wasn't such a surprise. So the first one was covered in red hair, and they called him Esau, which means hairy. Very imaginative name. And the second one came out grasping the heel of his brother, desperate to get out as well. And so they called him Jacob, which means that he grasps the heel. But it also means he deceives. And names were so important in this culture. I mean, they are to us, but even more so, it kind of seems strange that you would give your child that name. But God was over all. He knew what was coming. As they grew up, Esau became a skillful hunter, a man's man, and his father's favourite because he'd bring him home tasty wild game that Isaac liked to eat. While, in contrast, Jacob was more of a home-loving boy. He was his mother's favourite, and he enjoyed time with her around the tents, valuing the women's skills. We don't read very much about them as they grow up, but we know the story that Esau once gave away his birthright to Jacob for stew. He'd returned home hungry from his hunting, and he was impatient, and he didn't think about what he was doing. He just said, "I want the stew." And Jacob was like, "Well, only if you're going to give me your birthright." So maybe he's living up to his name already. And getting in a muddle already. But later on in Genesis 27, we get to where Rebecca gets her unhelpful reputation from. Isaac knows that he's close to death, and he wants to pass his blessing on to his eldest child, Esau. So he asks Esau to go off and hunt for some wild game and make the food that he loves to eat, and off he goes. But Rebecca was listening through the tent. As many of us know from New Wine, you can hear most things. And she wants the blessing for her favourite, for Jacob. So she decides to deceive Isaac, who's blind, and so can't easily see. Excuse me. And so she gets Jacob to kill a couple of the goats, the kid goats, and make the food that Isaac loves, the stew that he would have had from the wild food. She uses the goat's skin to put on Jacob's smooth arms and around his neck to disguise his smooth skin and pretend that he's Esau. And she makes him wear Esau's best clothes so that he even smells of his hunting macho brother when Isaac gets close to him. Isaac questions Jacob's voice, but he's deceived by the hairy skin and the smell of the clothes, and so he gives Jacob the firstborn blessing, that he will be blessed and favoured by God, that people will serve him, and that he will be Lord over his brother. Jacob just about leaves when Esau comes in with his wild, with his kill, ready to feed his father and receive his blessing, and they realise that something has gone slightly wrong. They see the deception, and Esau is angry. He swears that he's going to kill his brother. Isaac still gives him a blessing, but it's only a secondary blessing. He can't undo what he's already promised Jacob. So Rebecca tries to save her son and sends him off to her brother back in Haran, far away. And in saving his life, she loses him. That might remind us of another story. She never sees him again, as far as we know, and her deception has lost her the chance for her to be part of her son's life. And I can't imagine that living with Isaac and Esau was going to be easy after this, after the mess that she created. So what had gone wrong? Why wasn't she trusting in God's words to come to pass? Why was she trying to help it along? she really hadn't thought through the consequences of her actions. God had told her that Jacob was going to be the one who carried on the province, that he would rule over his brother. That's what she'd heard when she was pregnant. But I don't think this is how God had intended it to happen, for her to be separated from her son or estranged from her husband. Sometimes we try and work out God's plans and it doesn't go so well. Why had Rebecca not sought the Lord as she had done before? So often we try and look at what's going on and we think of the way that things should go. We think, oh, well, if we just do that, then this will happen. But actually God's view, like that tapestry, is so much bigger. His ideas are so much wider. Maybe Rebecca was still suffering and tarnished by the shame that she felt of being barren and childless for so long. Maybe the derision of others had put her down and made her feel unworthy. Shame's not a good thing to feel. It keeps us separate from others. It isolates us and makes us feel alone. Guilt is different. Guilt is sometimes appropriate. And that says, I've done something wrong. And often that helps us turn back to God, to look to him and ask for his forgiveness. Shame says, as Brené Brown says, shame says, I am wrong. Where guilt is, I did something wrong. Shame is, I am wrong. Which just is about who we are. But actually, none of that's true. It's an accusation from the enemy. It's a lie. Because God says that he loves us, that he chose us, that he made us, and he has good things in store for each of us. But sometimes those tapes in our heads go off and we listen to the lies. I was 8 when my parents split up. I lived in nice Commuterville, prosperous place, part of a church family, and I didn't know anybody else whose parents weren't together anymore. I felt like my world had ended. How could we carry on without my dad around? There were things on the news about how broken families were the source of all society's problems. And I just felt like I wasn't worthy. I blamed myself. I felt that maybe if I'd been better, then Daddy would have stayed. If I was enough, then he wouldn't have had to leave us and go to somebody else. Obviously, that's an 8-year-old's thinking. Not true. But sometimes those feelings of being unworthy, of not being enough, still trap me. The shame that, you know, I'm not worth sticking around for. And it causes me to question how much God really loves me. Even as I'm preparing to speak today, it's like, oh, well, they won't want to listen to you. You're not enough. But I know that God does love me. I know that trying to act in any other way and trying to make him love me more is futile. He gave his son for me. I don't want to deny the fact that Jesus' death is over all. The resurrection power is what saves us. Nothing that I can do can make any difference. But maybe that's what Rebecca felt, that she didn't feel worthy of God's plans. Maybe she thought that God would favour Esau because he was Isaac's favourite. He was the firstborn. And maybe she began to doubt what she'd really heard from God when she was pregnant. But when we say that Jesus' sacrifice wasn't enough to save us, that's what we're saying. We try and do something on our own. We try to satisfy ourselves rather than putting God first. Then we're getting things in a muddle. Fortunately, God knows each of us individually. He knows our strengths and weaknesses. He made us this way. His desire is for each of us to be the person that he created us to be. So he wants me to be more me, and he wants you to be more you, to stand up strong in who he's made you to be. As Paul says in Corinthians, we're all members of the body, and if we all play our part, the body will be strong. But if we all want to be eyes, how are we going to go anywhere? And if we're all feet, then How are we going to listen to people? Each of us need to be the person that God has created us to be and stand strong in that, not comparing ourselves to one another and trying to be something that we're not. Maybe Rebecca really needed to believe that she was enough, that God knew her sons well enough, that he was going to be able to work it through, and there was no need for her deception. After all, God had already brought Eliezer to her. God had already made a way for Isaac to be born when there was no biological way. She had the stories of God's provision there, and yet she still went her own way, did her own thing. Maybe it sounds familiar. In contrast to Rebecca as a parent, Jesus gives us a good picture in the parable of the running father, or maybe we know it better as the prodigal son. In Luke 15, he tells the story of a man who had two sons. And the younger one said, "I want my money, I want my inheritance, I don't want to wait around." Effectively saying, "I don't care, Dad, I want you dead, I just want my money." Then he runs off and he wastes it all in hedonistic living until he runs out of money. And then he recognises, as he's feeding the pigs, that he'd be better off at home, better off as a servant in his father's house. But his father doesn't send out a spy to look for him or a rescue package with enough to get him through. He's waiting for his son to come home. His father has been waiting and watching for him so that even when he does come back, he doesn't even wait for him to come home. He sees him at the edge of the village and he runs towards him, lifting up his skirts, ignoring his dignity and just running. It's not something that elderly Jewish men did. And his father just gathers him in a hug and calls for a ring for his fingers and a cloak to cover him and a sandals for his feet and throws him a big party. He doesn't even wait for his son to come to him in penitence and express his shame. But those gifts were really important. They were more than just we see in the natural. That cloak would have been an expensive family garment that identified him back as part of the family, even though he'd run away, even though he'd left and rejected them all. He was part of the family again. The family ring was like it was used to seal the financial deals. It was used to make contracts. That was like being given the family business credit card. Well, hey! Even though he'd wasted all that money, he was still trusted. And the sandals, they weren't just any old flip-flops. These were special sandals, only given to those who were going to stick around. This was his father saying, "I trust you not to run away. I trust you to stay and be part of this." And just as that prodigal was accepted back by his father in the story, so Almighty, loving God accepts us back when we turn to him. Fortunately, he doesn't wait for us to be perfect. He doesn't wait for us to be fixed. He'll have us back just as we are and trusts us with his gifts. We can reclaim the life that was always meant to be ours, be commissioned to be part of the family business, restored, forgiven, set up again on our feet as new creations within his family. We don't need to carry on living in the squalor and the rags that we've accumulated from our choices. We can accept his beautiful clothes, his beautiful home, his purpose. And he doesn't shame us or tell us, "I told you so." He runs towards us and shows us that he loves us, no matter who's watching. He is our Heavenly Father that we can listen to. Sorry, forgot about the PowerPoint. Who hugs us and calls us his own. So I've got something that I'd really like us to listen to hear the words. These are all words from the Bible. So it's a few minutes long, so shut your eyes and just let the words sink in and what God has to say to you.
The words you are about to experience are true. They will change your life if you let them. For they come from the very heart of God. He loves you, and He is the Father you have been looking for all your life. This is His love letter to you. My child, you may not know me, but I know everything about you. I know when you sit down and when you rise up. I'm familiar with all your ways. Even the very hairs on your head are numbered, for you were made in my image. In me you live and move and have your being. For you are my offspring. I knew you even before you were conceived. I chose you when I planned creation. You were not a mistake, for all your days are written in my book. I determined the exact time of your birth and where you would live. You are fearfully and wonderfully made. I knit you together in your mother's womb and brought you forth on the day you were born. I have been misrepresented by those who don't know me. I am not distant and angry, but am the complete expression of love. And it is my desire to lavish my love on you, simply because you are my child and I am your father. I offer you more than your earthly father ever could, for I am the perfect father. Every good gift that you receive comes from my hand, for I am your provider and I meet all your needs. My plan for your future has always been filled with hope, because I love you with an everlasting love. My thoughts toward you are countless as the sand on the seashore, and I rejoice over you with singing. I will never stop doing good to you, for you are my treasured possession. I desire to establish you with all my heart and all my soul, and I want to show you great and marvelous things. If you seek me with all your heart, you will find me. Delight in me, and I will give you the desires of your heart, for it is I who gave you those desires. I am able to do more for you than you could possibly imagine, for I am your greatest encourager. I am also the Father who comforts you in all your troubles. When you are brokenhearted, I am close to you. As a shepherd carries a lamb, I have carried you close to my heart. One day, I will wipe away every tear from your eyes, and I'll take away all the pain you have suffered on this earth. I am your Father, and I love you even as I love my Son Jesus. For in Jesus, my love for you is revealed. He is the exact representation of my being. He came to demonstrate that I am for you, not against you, and to tell you that I am not counting your sins. Jesus died so that you and I could be reconciled. His death was the ultimate expression of my love for you. I gave up everything I loved that I might gain your love. If you receive the gift of my Son Jesus, you receive me. And nothing will ever separate you from my love again. Come home and I'll throw the biggest party heaven has ever seen. I have always been Father and will always be Father. My question is, will you be my child? I am waiting for you. love, your dad, Almighty God.
So I would say, let those words sink in and soak in God's love for you. Get to know his promises and his truths, so that when the lies in our heads or the society tells us come up large, you can actually counteract them with what God says about us, that we are chosen, that we are loved, that we are real. Really part of his family, part of his body. It may be that, like Rebecca, you've had dreams or words as a younger person that just haven't come to pass yet, and you want to trust him. Well, commit yourself again to do that. Or maybe that there's things that you used to do that you've enjoyed that you don't do anymore. Or maybe you feel like you've tried to make things happen and you wish you hadn't tried to do it your way because there was probably a better way that God wanted to do it. Well, he can still use you. He can still use the ongoing from that. Or maybe you feel trapped by shame and feelings of worthlessness. Maybe something you've done, or maybe something other people have said to you. Just take those to God, because he wants to bless you. Get to know his truth and accept his gift of peace, so that we can trust in his name for the greater things.